Your licensure meeting is called to order. Today is Thursday, September 29, 2016. It's 9:08 a.m. and we're in the Senate office building in room 1200. A quorum is present. This meeting is chaired by myself, Senator Chuck Wieger, but Representative Sandra Erickson is the co-chair as well. We alternate the presiding of each meeting. Today, we have the agenda includes the approval of minutes and discussion of various governance and tiered licensure proposals. It's not our intent to take final action. We have time for that in the next couple of meetings, but we do have a few documents, and we're going to refer to those in just a little bit. Some of them, including one from myself, just got out, and so we apologize, and I want to thank Representative Erickson, Senator Pratt for getting out some earlier proposals, and it'll be a good discussion as we get to how we can better serve professional educators in our state. Next, though, is the approval of minutes for 8/23/16. You have a copy. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval.
On Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval.
On that motion, discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Next, we have the discussion of governance and tiered licensure proposals. And there's at least three or four documents that I want to call to everyone's attention, and maybe just for organizing, so you have them. There's one that I had just sent out, and that's labeled Senate DFL Educator Licensure Governance Proposal. And then there's another one that is a tiered licensure framework. So everyone should have a copy of that, and I believe they're available for the public as well. And additional copies are being brought by Mr. Weiner right now. So we have that. An additional document would be Senate Education Board of Teaching Reforms. That is from the Senate Republican Caucus. And there, I have two pages on that document, and I believe that would be the most recent, and I recognize that all of these are works in progress. And then we have the proposal that's labeled Agency Licensing with Professional Educator Boards, and Representative Erickson, on behalf of the IRs in the House, presented that. And so we have those three documents. I did not receive anything from anyone else.
Chair Wieger,
committee.
Could I interrupt you for a minute? We do not have a copy of the House Republican proposal or the House DFL proposal, if they have one.
Okay. Senator Dame's staff will get, and Senator Pratt and others, you'll get that. Or does anyone have a copy of the House proposal? Okay. And I know that earlier, Representative Erickson, I think, did send it out by email, or at least I had it, but that'll be distributed right now. So it's the House Republican proposal that members need. And that is being distributed right now. And I'm not aware that there's a House DFL proposal on governance and tiered licensure. I haven't received one, nor is anyone here to represent that point of view, but I'm sure they will be weighing in at some point here. We also have a document. It's been prepared by Kevin Baer, the Assistant Revisor of Statutes, dated today. It's a 50-state survey, and it goes into licensure structure, governance, and et cetera. And that's available for your reference, and I believe those would be the main documents. Does everyone have a copy now?
Yes.
Okay. And what we could do is just talk about governance for the board. And just as a reminder, on the back of the agenda, just for our focus again on the agenda, it has what our charge was that we agreed to. And on the legislative recommendations were to clarify licensure statutes, restructure teacher licenses, consider a tiered licensure system. You can read that, but again, this is the charge that we're going to be addressing. And I believe some have also raised some additional questions. I believe Senator Claussen had talked a little bit about testing and related issues to educators, and we aren't restricted from doing whatever the majority would like to do as we put together that report. So on the governance proposal, we have a number of thoughts here, and we'll open it up. But Representative Erickson, you came forward with the first proposal, and as a courtesy, I think maybe addressing that. We will hold off on tiered licensure discussion until we talk a little bit more about the governance. But we'll have Representative Erickson, and we'll maybe if we have questions on that, we'll do that, and then I'll ask perhaps Senator Pratt, and I'll share some comments on what I put forward. And then we'll discuss, and if anyone in the audience, you'll certainly have a chance to weigh in on this. But I think right now we want to get perspectives of the members as we continue to explore our charge. So, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Uyghur, and everyone present here today, including those of us at the table. We presented this handout that's labeled Agency Licensing with Professional Educator Boards last week, Tuesday, when Senator Uyghur called a meeting of Representative Loon and I with him and partisan and nonpartisan staff. And because I had given a directive after last meeting that our staffs get together and discuss various proposals that perhaps we could submit as one today. And we did not learn of any kind of meeting between staffs. I gave the charge to our staff to put together a proposal that was innovative and that was not status quo, and that would be one agency. And so after brainstorming among my staff and Representative Loon and me, we came up with this document that's labeled Agency Licensing with Professional Educator Boards. And Senator, with your permission, I'd like nonpartisan staff Tim Strom to present this for us. Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, members. Thank you. The sheet in front of you should say Agency Licensing with Professional Educator Boards underlined at the top. This is the House GOP proposal. In terms of the licensing division right now, as members all know, there's a combination of functions that are spread between the Board of Teaching, the Board of School Administrators, and the licensing division at the Department of Education. This proposal would put most of the authority for the licensing directly under the licensing division at the department, establish a statutory director for the licensing division, and give that director essentially authority and a requirement to report directly to the legislature at least a few times a year about licensing activities. Second, the licensing division would be the authority given to make all decisions regarding licensing consistent with statute and rule, and we'll talk about the rule authority in a moment. The licensure division would also review and approve the preparation programs consistent with statute and rule and subject to recommendation by the boards. The commissioner would be the actual authority. The commissioner of education would be the actual authority for rulemaking. The rulemaking would be laid out in statute so that specific authority would be granted to the commissioner for rules, both related to licensure and preparation programs. Throughout this document and others, this is referred to as limited rulemaking, with the general intent being that for specific areas, the statute would describe how broadly the commissioner has authority to make or revise a rule, or whether in that area the commissioner would need to seek legislative authority before proceeding with the rule. Finally, then, in terms of the licensing division, there would be a clear approval process, a clear appeal process, so that any questions regarding licensing would go through this process. There would be a decision made by the licensing division that could be reviewed by the commissioner, and if necessary, then fall into the administrative law judge procedure for licensing issues that are not resolved at that level. That would be the role of the Educator Licensing Division at MDE. The two boards then would remain, but they essentially would turn into professional conduct review boards and advisory boards to offer best advice to the Division of Licensure. In terms of review, the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators would provide initial professional conduct review to handle the recommendations regarding misconduct and discipline matters, and forward those on to the Division of Licensing for the decision. Additionally, the Board of Teaching would continue to set the standards and ethics that Minnesota teachers are expected to follow. The board structure would be not entirely dissimilar from now. There would be 9 members appointed by the governor, subject to Senate confirmation. At least 6 of those members currently teaching or teaching at time of the appointment, with 4 of the 6 being public school teachers, and 3 public members appointed by the governor, at least one of whom must be a parent with a child in the school system. In terms of the structure of the Board of School Administrators, again, this organization would recommend disciplinary actions to the Division of Licensure. It would also adopt standards and ethics for school administrators. The School Administrator Board would consist of 7 members, and those members would be delineated in statute to include 1 elementary school principal, 1 secondary school principal, 1 superintendent, 1 community education director, 1 special education director, and 2 public members, at least one of whom should be a parent with a child in the school system. Mr. Chair, members, I believe at the time of the meeting last week, the House was open to the idea that there could potentially be 1 professional educator standards board, but given the current structure with the majority of the rulemaking and the decision authority going to the licensure division, that would be more a question of preference as to whether the educator standards board should be 1 or 2, depending on whether one was licensed as an administrator or not.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Questions? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we look at this, and either Representative Erickson or Loon, or we've had a couple of meetings, and this particular recommendation doesn't seem to follow the Office of Legislative Auditor's recommendations. I didn't hear anything like this from MDE or the Board of Teaching. So I'm just wondering, the kind of feedback that we had at a couple meetings already, this plan looks quite different from what we heard from the recommendations in the room the last few meetings. Just curious as to why you went a different, totally different route.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator. Well, in our discussions between staff and Representative Loon and Representative Christensen, we started thinking in terms of accountability and transparency. And personally, I've been very disappointed in the Board of Teaching in the last few years. They've not followed the law, and we lacked a sense of being able to hold them accountable unless it was through statute. So and they don't follow that. So in trying to be highly respective of accountability to our teachers and to our citizens of the state and having transparency. We thought outside the box, moved from the status quo, and presented this at the meeting on the 20th to Senator Wigger. And as I said, in part because the staffs had not gotten together to come together to come up with one plan or at least one possible plan. And so this is thinking outside the box, and it is a chain of command system. So the commissioner will be accountable. The commissioner will be overseeing the executive director when it comes to transparency and accountability. So when we receive all these complaints, we're going to, you know, be able to hold the commissioner accountable, who can hold the executive director of this agency accountable, who can hold staff accountable. So in looking at what has been lacking, we think this plan could be an option. So that's my answer.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to expand a little bit or add to Representative Erickson's comments, and you know, the legislative auditor's report did provide a second option. Option two was moving the licensing all to the Department of Education. So it was something that they did comment on, held it up as another option. I think, you know, some things to look at as we have, you know, I think a good and thorough discussion about this, because I think we have two good proposals, two different ideas, which direction we want to head. But, you know, the moving all of the functions into the agency as a larger entity with perhaps more staff resources may make sense. I happen to agree with Representative Erickson's comments about the level of accountability and trying to find a way in which we can get our arms around what has been described, I think, very aptly as a broken system, and to try to make a repair and a new process that works well. And I guess the question in my mind is, how do we do that in some way that ensures it's going to work? Or there are some consequences or accountability or actions or responsibility brought to bear if it doesn't? And I know from a legislative standpoint, we've got a lot of that happens between the legislature and the executive branch with hearings and budget process and that. And that doesn't seem to be a direct line with the current process in the Board of Teaching. So, you know, from that standpoint, I prefer this method. But, again, I think that's what this working group is here to discuss and try to resolve.
Follow up, Senator Pratt. Senator Pratt, I want to see if there's a draw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate your answers on that particular on this issue. I think everyone here on our very first day agreed that we do need to make some changes. I think the Board of Teaching has already started to implement some of those changes. I think there was a great agreement that we do need to get away from status quo, but yet the MDE, the Board of Teaching, the Office of Legislative, the auditors, all who I respect greatly in their own individual right, came together, I think, on a plan that is so far removed from this. So I look forward to the discussion going forward and also from hearing from those groups that would be affected. I look forward to further discussion on this.
Senator Pratt, followed by Representative DeRusso and Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of to Senator Dahl's point, Representative Erickson, this does seem to be quite a departure, but I've been trying to thumb through this 50-state survey, and from what I recall from the OLA report, while it doesn't necessarily meet the testimony that we've heard, it certainly isn't inconsistent with what we see in other states or other ways that we issue licenses within the state, and I wonder if you could maybe talk to how that fits in the overall, how this framework would fit in other areas.
Thank you, Senator Wigger and Senator Pratt. I did call some of these states to ask them about their operations, and invariably it seemed that the direction Massachusetts and Virginia in particular, I spent time visiting, when you have the same department or agency that has control over K-12 students or E-12 students as it is in Minnesota, that having that direct relationship with the licensing is essential. And, you know, in states like Massachusetts where they have an investigative board investigative section like we do with the Board of Teaching, all of that is constant communication with what is happening in setting standards, in testing. All of that works together so that when teachers are being prepared in their preparatory programs, there's a direct link between the standard setting that's going on in the department for K-12 or E-12 and our higher ed. And they told me that this is a good working relationship, especially in Massachusetts and Virginia, two states to whom I have looked for years as models. So in that respect, I felt that we had some verification that this could work well in Minnesota, too, and maybe improve that relationship between MDE and what goes on in licensing. And so with one entity, we'd be more directly affecting great teaching and superb learning in our classrooms because we're working jointly, or as one now.
Senator Pratt.
I think just a quick comment. It's very different than our proposal, but one of the things I do like about this, and I want to thank the House for doing it, is one of the gaps I think we found is accountability. And I think this puts, I think what you see in our proposal and this proposal is increased accountability, and appreciate that the House kind of thought outside the box beyond just the testimony and as Representative Erickson said, look to other states as well.
Thank you. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to apologize for the late arrival. I had a community meeting in my district before this meeting. I'm not particularly in agreement with the entity that would be in charge of the licenses being MDE. It's not in keeping with how we do professional licensing in other professions in the state. We had the person from the Board of Architecture and Engineering and whatnot in to talk to us about their board structure, and all of those professions are answerable to a board made up of people that come from the discipline areas to do the licensing. And so this would be a kind of breaking with precedent of how we do professional licensing in this state. The question of staff resources is really a bit of a moot point because it's frankly up to the legislature to decide whether we're going to provide the funds to provide the staffing wherever it lands. And then in terms of the number of complaints and so on, an awful lot of the complaints really, to me, it seemed to be of three natures, of the question of the portfolios. But other than that, it's the confusing nature of the statutes, which we need to fix, and process. When people are trying to access the system, their problems are how they negotiate the process and what kind of answers they get or don't get about the process. And I've personally had experience with that both when I was pursuing my own license and when I've tried to help some of my tutees with the process. And frankly, those complaints land squarely on MDE, not on the Board of Teaching, because MDE has been in charge of process. So I don't think that we can pin all of those complaints on the Board of Teaching. Because when people call MDE, they either do or don't get answers about this process. And very often when I've called, the answer has been really a non-answer, that you are just told, oh, well, we're not in charge of that, so we can't help you, even though, in fact, they are in charge of that process. So, and then in terms of the accountability, the accountability is what we make it. The commissioner is a political appointee. The Board of Teaching are appointees. There isn't a different level of accountability between those two processes. The staff at MDE, some of them have an education background, many of them don't. And we have not really delved into what the background of the people making the on-the-ground decisions about people's paperwork when they come in is. And I think that bears some looking into also. So I'm not really ready to move licensure to MDE without having a lot of those discussions first.
Thank you, Representative Urusso. Before you got here, we had three different proposals which we're discussing. Did House Dems put together anything, or are they planning on that?
We haven't yet. We're looking to see what the outcome of these discussions is going to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bit backtracking, perhaps, and picking up on Representative Urusso's comments, but I'm curious, perhaps staff could help. What are some of the commonalities? What are some of the differences from other professional licensing boards that we're seeing in this proposal as compared to others in the state? And then does the state actually have some type of a guideline for the establishment of boards?
Mr. Strom, or you're asking for staff or Bjorn? Okay, excuse me, Anne Marie or Ms. Butler, going to get the statute.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Arnson.
I think I can answer the one half of Senator Clausen's question, which was, you know, how do other boards, professional boards in the state, handle the kind of situation of the function in an independent board or in an agency? And if you look back, I think the OLA report itself was distributed at the first meeting. And if it's of any interest to members, on page 91 of that report, the OLA assembled in three categories selection of the professional licensing boards and licensed professions in the state as of 2015, and indicated which of those entities were independent, which of them were professions licensed by state agencies, and finally, which of them were a professional licensing board with some state agency involvement, which at present would include the teaching profession. Again, that's page 91 of the report, exhibit 5.3.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Yes, Senator Clausen.
Mr. Arnson, as you look at those, do you see any reasoning behind why those three columns exist? In other words, are there some commonalities that have placed those different groups as they are presented there in the report?
Mr. Arnson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Clausen, I don't have a good answer for that question.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from my reading of these three columns, there are certain common features of the professions that are in each of the columns. In the middle column, where there's a licensing board and state agency involvement, we have three professions that are the trades and then the ones from education. In the professions that are licensed by state agencies, with the exception of the speech-language pathologists and the audiologists, none of those is based on a specific educational path, of recognized degrees that lead to that profession. when you look at the column that are licensed by professional licensing boards, there are some exceptions, but the vast majority of them are associated with accredited degrees and recognized educational pathways that lead to those licensures, where there are accreditation bodies involved and so on, certainly true of accountants, psychology, social work, various forms of medical practice, and so on. And so there's a slightly different character in each of those, and teaching and administration certainly would fall more under the accredited degree-oriented training path than the trades path or the more kind of eclectic assortment of things that are under merely the state agencies.
Thank you. Further comments or questions on this proposal on governance? Senator Klassen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my comments were leading us to try to what actually Representative Yaruso has really evaluated for us, that if you look at practices here in the state of Minnesota, independent professional licensing boards, and I certainly include teaching and administration under that category, is more suited for that type of an arrangement than what we currently have and perhaps what we're looking at this time in the proposal from the House. And I'd be curious if, again, we have anything in statute, guidelines, that directs us into how these were actually placed.
Senator Klassen, we'll ask staff to dive into that further. And I believe Representative Erickson did say, well, we're thinking outside the box here. So they didn't feel restricted by statutory restrictions if there, in fact, is something. But I understand the importance of precedent as well. We'll go next to the Senate IR proposal, and Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. IR, that's going back a ways. That's okay, I don't mind.
GOP.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Senator Housley and Senator Dames. We worked very well in a collaborative manner along with our staff to put together a very kind of brief framework. The idea here is not to micromanage the process as much as it is to establish an effective governance. So our proposal suggests that we have a board of teaching, and that board of teaching be accountable to a joint commission of the legislature. Some of the things that we found was that we really lack communication and coordination between the Board of Teaching, and hopefully that would strengthen that relationship in such a way where with a joint commission, we as a legislature could respond even when we're not in session. We're looking at that structure as possibly being modeled against the Legislative Coordinating Commission, or LCC, where the commission establishes and gives initial approval to the budget as well as compensation for the Board of Teaching, would be able to provide interim review and approval for rule changes. Like my colleagues in the House, we thought a little bit outside the box, and I'm glad to hear Representative Yaruso and Senator Klassen talk about the politicization of the board. Being a gubernatorial appointment, it lends itself to that politicization. So we really went more along the lines of trying to structure this along how other professional standard boards are being set, whether it's insurance or chiropractic or real estate, by having the industry having more of a voice and the stakeholders having more of a voice in who does that governance. So we reduced the board from 11 to 7. With three classroom teachers that would be appointed by Education Minnesota, one superintendent that would be appointed by MASA, one principal that would be appointed by joint recommendations of the elementary principals and the secondary principals, one school board member that's appointed by MSBA, and then the governor or the Department of Education would be able to appoint the chair. Then the Board of Teaching would be accountable for issuing licenses, determining the credentials and gaps. I was somewhat disheartened when I heard over and over that when a teaching candidate comes and asks what they need to do, the Board of Teaching refers them to one of the preparatory programs. Board of Teaching should have the standards and be able to evaluate that and be accountable for those decisions. And finally, communicating with applicants in a reasonable time frame. We also believe that the Board of Teaching needs to be independent from teacher prep. Teacher prep certainly has a strong influence in the work and the policies that the board is going to be doing, but they also have a financial stake. And in order to make sure that there's, I don't believe there's been any conflict of interest, but in order to at least avoid the appearance or the possibility that we'd be able to do that. So the Board of Teaching would set minimum standards in consultation with teacher prep programs and MACD, and then the institutions above and beyond those minimum requirements could, in fact, add their own additional requirements on top of that, whatever those might be. The Board of Teaching should not be combined with BOSA at this time. I think there's a good argument to say that secondary administration and teaching licensure should be combined. What we talked about as our primary fear is that there's a lot of work to be done in streamlining and improving the process within the issuing of teaching licenses, and we heard over and over right now that the school administrative process is working well. I don't want to distract the progress we're making here today with efforts to merge the two programs. I want the Board of Teaching to be focused on improving their processes. I want school administrators to be continuing to focus on their processes. And down the line, if it makes sense, we can take a look at combining the two. But right now, I think we've got enough work to do without worrying about merging two boards. And finally, I think the Board of Teaching should be accountable for professional standards. Under this structure, we would allow the Board of Teaching then, once that board is comprised, to establish the process and then come back and review that with the Joint Commission of the Legislature. So that's the Senate Republican proposal, and my colleagues would be happy to stand for questions.
Senator Pratt, ethics and discipline, how would that be addressed?
Mr. Chair, that's the last bullet point where we talk about the professional standards would be the ethics and discipline. Looking for the Board of Teaching to find out what works best for that industry and then come back to the legislature with proposed rules and processes.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pratt, I appreciate your proposal. I think it's moving a little better in the right direction. No disrespect for the last plan, but I do have I do worry about an additional commission. I do worry about the legislature maybe overstepping or getting into the weeds a little more than maybe they need to. And I see the first bullet point under that, reducing inconsistency in statutes. I think we can do that without another commission. So that is one concern. And another one is the makeup of the board. We could potentially have only... We could have fewer teachers than administrators. I think for having a board of teachers, I would think that you would have a majority of teachers at least. So just an observation.
Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, I would, you know, there's virtually little to no possibility that you would have more administrators than teachers under this proposal unless the governor chose to appoint an administrator or the department chose to appoint an administrator, but we have equal representation. In fact, we have three classroom teachers and only two administrators on this. So depending on how MSBA appointed their school board representative or the governor appointed his, there's little to no chance that the voice of the teachers would be in a minority. They would at least be on equal footing.
Sarah Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate a little bit more conversation on why the appointment of the chair by the governor or commissioner of education, making it more of a political appointment.
Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Clausen for the question. Today, the governor appoints all 11 members, and I think it's, one, recognition that there has to be a relationship between the Department of Education and the administrative function to make this thing work well. One thing that the Department of Education does very well is execute. And we have to, but we also have to make sure that that we keep that relationship and that the governor and the administration has a stake in the operations of this board. There is a little bit of politicization with that appointment, as you said, but I think what you see in our proposal is a drastic reduction in the political appointments that happen here because we have the stakeholders in education making their appointments and having their representatives be their choice.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand. I appreciate the comment about the fact that the teacher prep programs have a financial interest and other sorts of vested interests in the outcomes of any of the decisions. However, they are the ones who are involved in providing the training and knowing what their programs can do, can't do, are doing, are not doing, and so on. And so I would question the not including a member on the board that represents the teacher training programs. Now, this would be one person, so they certainly would not control the outcomes, but they need to be there for the discussions. And this is in keeping with some of the other boards. I checked on the engineering and architecture board. Although there's not a formal slot left for a person from the University of Minnesota, there is, in fact, somebody from the University of Minnesota. I would, as I said, I think I would like to see this modified if it went forward to include someone from MACD or otherwise that would represent those programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator or Representative Russo. We had quite a bit of discussion about that, and whether or not we should include that. There's nothing that precludes any of these appointing organizations from finding somebody who has a background in teacher prep. But it's going to be the institutions and MACD that are bringing forth these proposals for the Board of Teaching to consider, and we just felt that to be truly independent, that given the structure and the representation, that the proposals could be proposed and reviewed without necessarily having a voting seat on the board. But we do recognize in this proposal that they are extremely important stakeholders, and that's why we noted it on the third major bullet.
Follow up, Representative Urso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in terms of whether they're acknowledged in by being excluded. And any one person representing MACD would not be a person that is determining what the programs do or don't do in all of the institutions that they represent, and certainly if there were a decision being made that affected their own institution that they're involved with, they would could recuse themselves, as one does. So I really think that the failing to include them in the decision making about how standards are implemented would do a disservice to the process, that to make sure that we implement things that are going to be workable, and that truly, really represent all of the stakeholders in this process.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Ms. Butler could answer this, or maybe Senator Pratt. I wonder if we have a separation of powers problem. We can't have one branch delegating authority to another branch of government, and I would think that adopting proposed rules would be considered an executive branch power, but yet they're held accountable to a legislative commission. It seems might be problematic.
We'll yield first to Senator Pratt, and then Ms. Butler's prepared.
Oh, I'll let Ms. Butler.
Okay, Ms. Butler.
Mr. Chair, members, there's a potential for a problem. I guess it depends on how it's structured, but there is an issue of an agency or entity having executive branch functions such as rulemaking and reporting to a different branch of government, the legislature in this case. But there's the details aren't on the paper here to know for sure.
And Senator Dahl, we look to the Legislative Coordinating Commission kind of as the framework of what we were proposing here. Certainly the LCC is not considered to be in conflict, and so we would hope that it would be structured in a way that would not create that conflict.
Further questions, comments? Okay, we'll go next to... Yes, Senator Daines.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a couple of comments on this proposal. Number one, this is a general outline of what we're looking at. Certainly there would have to be some modifications and stuff. I fully understand that. But we're trying to look at this from a little different light, bringing in a little different light on this that we feel we could probably have a stronger board, accomplish things that maybe we're struggling with right now. And I think one of the purposes of this commission is to look at things from all different angles and all different opportunities. And so I think the questions we're having are really great questions, but I think we want to keep in mind that the purpose of this commission is to try to make this as strong as we can. And so we need to look at a lot of options here before we come up with some conclusions as to what we're going to do. And we felt this was a good option to kind of change this up a little bit, but probably put some strength into it and maybe make it a little stronger operation. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Anything further? Okay, we'll go next to the proposal that I shared labeled Senate DFL Educator Licensure Governance Proposal. And this closely aligns with the OLA recommendations on needed reforms. And I believe it would be a very efficient and transparent process. It consolidates all teacher licensure applications into one entity, the Professional Educator Standards Board. It provides the structure to provide accurate and thorough information on how to appeal licensure decisions, consistency and transparency in the process. It follows the state model of professional licensing boards. You saw the reference in the report. It does eliminate staff duplication. I know there's the argument that we should have two different groups, BOSA, but I believe this is greater efficiency, and we would eliminate top-down structure and provide open discussion on licensure issues, clarity on which entity deals with ethics issues, provides a board with a broad spectrum of members to represent the state as a whole on licensing issues, provides for a board that has licensure expertise and public members with on-the-ground knowledge of how current practices are working, and it provides a consistent, transparent, and non-threatening way for educators and the public to voice their positions on licensing issues. The Minnesota Professional Educator Standards Board, there's several bullets that
highlights, just as you have in the other proposals. This would be combined for all educators. It would be a 13-member board appointed by the governor with advice and consent from the Senate. 7 teachers licensed to teach and currently teaching in a Minnesota school. 1 higher ed rep who must be a faculty member preparing teachers. 1 higher ed rep who must be a faculty member in an education administration program. 1 licensed school administrator currently employed by a Minnesota school or a school district. 1 licensed community ed director or licensed early childhood education teacher. 1 public member who must be a parent of a student enrolled in a Minnesota public school. And 1 public member who must be a current or former public school board member. The terms are set by Minnesota Statute 214.09. The governor shall solicit recommendations from groups representing the above and making the recommended appointments. And duties, again, review and approve teacher prep programs, review and approve education administration programs, and on the back side you'll see issue, approve, or deny educator licensing apps, rulemaking authority related to licensure and prep requirements, review professional misconduct and discipline matters, determine deficiencies in a candidate's application and how to rectify the deficiency, and to hire an executive director and the necessary staff members to perform its duties with appropriate funding from the legislature. That would be the highlight on governance, and open for questions, comments. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Wigger. Is MDE involved at all in this governance model?
The Representative Erickson, MDE is not, you know, on the board. There could be a staffing, purchase for various services, which is done right now. You know, it's housed, as you know, at the Department of Ed, and need to dive further into that detail regarding budget, but they would not be, the board would determine and through its budget with appropriation on how it would utilize MDE for services.
So, Mr. Chair, the licensing division then is a part of this new educator licensure governance proposal. It is not a separate entity, correct? As now we have, the two boards, but we have the licensing division under MDE. So is that now gone?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under on the second page, the determining deficiencies in a candidate's application and how to rectify that, we spent a little time talking about that, and this is an area where I tend to get hung up because the lawsuits and that have occurred have often been with telling a candidate to call and in a teacher prep program to find out what they need to do. So under your proposal, would you envision that there would be this would be the board's responsibility of identifying specifically what a candidate needs to do to become licensed, or would the board again be in a position of referring or suggesting that a candidate contact a teacher prep program to figure it out?
Thank you, Representative Loon. The buck would stop with the board, and we could even put in some direction and on timely responses and on that whole process. The executive director and staff would be accountable for that charge, and then ultimately they're accountable to that board. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the back page there under duties, I would suggest that we add one, and that is the compliance function that currently rests with the department. And I'm talking specifically about the STAR report that all districts must complete. So there is a compliance function. I think that if we're going to transfer everything to one agency or one organization or one entity, that compliance needs to be listed as well.
Thank you. Further comments, questions, Senator Dahl? Again, we're not going to vote on these yet. We will be entertaining a lot of testimony at our next meeting. If there's a chance, we may get some feedback today. But again, this is helpful to see where people are at in the process. Did I see a hand down here? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I like the plan, not surprising. But, the key recommendation, the first one from the OLA, was the legislature should consolidate all teacher license activities into one state entity. And I think that's what we're doing here. And to Representative Loon, one of the criticisms was when MDE was the licensure denial letters, they should specifically state the deficiencies it identified in the applicant's preparation or qualification. So we are addressing that, but through the one entity. And I think very clear when we heard testimony either from the OLA or other folks, the confusion, whose responsibilities, where does the buck stop in terms of, all of the issues that have surrounded this issue. But so I think having that one entity is the right approach.
Representative Garusso, but just a heads up for the stakeholders here. I'm going to ask on the governance issue first if anyone would like to give some comments, but at this meeting it would be limited to no more than 1 minute or so, but to just give some general reaction to what our discussion has been, as we are very accountable to what your interests are as well. Representative Garusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have kind of mixed feelings about the combining the teaching and administrative boards in one. If perhaps we were in a much more ideal situation where we did not have the existing problems we have to straighten out on the teaching side, I think it would make more sense. But I think because we have a significant struggle ahead of us of how to rearrange that side of the equation, I don't think it's particularly wise to combine the two functions right now. We've not heard similar issues coming from the administrative side, and so to kind of toss them into the mix, I don't think it's wise from a purely practical point of view. And then if we compare it to other professions and, where we do have combined boards, where we don't have combined boards, we have the combined board for the engineering and architecture so long that I can never remember all of them that are in it. In that case, although they're different professions, they're different degrees, the character of their work is pretty similar across the board, literally. And one is not supervising the other in any of those cases. They might happen to be in a particular company, but it's not set up that way. In the case of the medical professions, we have separate boards for nurses, doctors, pharmacists, and so on, because their job functions are significantly different from each other. And I think that's the case here. That although we have teachers who move into the administrative positions, of course, those jobs are very, very different from each other. And I think it might be broadening the scope too much to have an effective board. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask anyone in the audience that would like to address us. We'll try to keep it to 1 minute. You know the protocol. Identify your name, who you're representing, and focus on the governance issue. We've given you three perspectives. You may have another perspective as well. Senator Pratt, first off.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a couple of questions, if you'll let me. First of all, in your top section, you say that this proposal follows the state model for majority of licensing boards, and yet you
keep it as a gubernatorial appointment, and I can't think of any of these that you've listed above where the governor appoints the board. Can you tell me why you stuck with a gubernatorial appointment rather than really following and be consistent with other professional standards boards?
The gubernatorial appointment is, you know, vetted and, you know, through a process. It goes then to the, you know, the Senate ultimately for advice and consent, and I think the process works.
And again, Mr. Chair, I'm just simply, I think seeing an inconsistency when your proposal says it's following the state model for a majority of other licensing boards, and you leave it as a gubernatorial appointment. We've talked a lot today about the politicization of this board, and I think we need to get out of that. I personally believe we need to get out of that. I think Representative Russo has made some very good points. I wish the House DFL caucus would have put forth a proposal rather than waiting to see ours, and I appreciate that she's been here. Representative Russo has been a consistent member of this, but I got to say her colleagues have been less so. And also, if you could talk about how this proposal limits the top-down structure. I guess it's not quite as clear how it's eliminating a top-down structure other than consolidating the two. And then my final question would be, why still give the teachers a voting majority? I certainly agree that teachers should have an equal voice in this board. I don't know that they should be able to necessarily as a block be able to implement their will over, say, the administrators. I think we have to have a more equal voice between the two. So if you could discuss those two, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Pratt. On the top down, I was looking at the House proposal where, you know, coming from the Department of Ed at the commissioner and then to a director who not either the commissioner nor the potential director even would have to be a teacher. And then you get, you know, different responsibilities. I like the idea of the majority of a board being the professionals, and that is done in most professions if we want to treat it as a profession. And they should, the majority get the best that you can. And that's a process that I think better serves the profession, especially at a time when we have a shortage and we're trying to get the best. We need to have the majority of teachers. Representative Russo, I believe, too.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I would just say that I don't disagree with your last statement, but the makeup of your board is not equal between the administrators and the rank and file teachers, and I think that's my comment more on the structure than anything else, that we need a more fair and equitable distribution if we're going to combine these two boards and not have one constituency be able to drive the agenda.
Okay, point noted. Thanks. Representative Russo and Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick note about the question of about the appointment by the governor. All the other professional boards that I've seen, the first line in the, you know, one of the character of the board is the members are appointed by the governor. That's the mechanism by which we put people on these boards. They're recommended by the various groups that they represent, but ultimately all of the boards, all of the members that I've seen are in fact appointed by the governor.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to pick up on some of the comments of Senator Pratt and the Board of Teaching versus the administrative group. I think we need to really look at separating those out. The requirements are so different. The board makeup, I think, is important that you have practicing administrators that are making those decisions and are the makeup of that board. The licensing requirements are totally different, and I think separating those two functions and those two groups is important piece as we move ahead. So that would be my recommendation.
Thank you. Okay. We'd like to, I believe, whoever would like to go first. Okay, next. Okay,
Mr. No, Chair, my name is Jim Barnhill. I'm with the Board of Teaching, Representative Erickson. I'm going to obviously speak briefly with under a minute. I'm not speaking to the consolidation of BOSA and the BOT. I'm really speaking, like to speak to the issues that have led us here today. The issues that led us here today was the fact that we did not have a consolidation between rulemaking and policymaking and implementation. So it's very difficult. It has been very difficult for me for the past 3.5-4 years to hear the degree of mistrust placed in the Board of Teaching and the talk of this being a political issue. When I came onto the board, I thought, well, isn't this great? We can talk about real issues, talk about education issues that mattered here, and this, I didn't see this as a Democratic or a Republican thing. And I don't think anyone on the Board of Teaching sees the issues that we've dealt with as a Republican versus a Democratic issue. We have approached these things with in the level of integrity that I can't describe to you the level of integrity that this board has. And the OLA report has made it very clear that the responsibility here is the fact that we don't have a consolidated policymaking group with implementation. That's the problem. And the problem has been, with all due respect, not necessarily to anyone here, but the convolution of law that has hands tied behind our back for this time. And now we have the solutions in front of us. So really what I'd like to say to you is, if you consolidate under the Board of Teaching, these issues of mistrust will go away, because we will have, in fact, the ability and the power to make the changes that need to be made. And so that's really what I'd like to say to you. I don't see this as a Democratic or a Republican. I mean, so when it comes to governor appointed, I just don't think that that has anything to do with what's going on here. And I can't think of a single time in the past 3 years or 4 years that I've been on the board that there has been an issue that has been some sort of clearly Democratic or clearly Republican issue that we're all lining behind. I don't think the governor-appointed issue is an issue at all. I do believe that if you allow the Board of Teaching to take the responsibilities that, as outlined in the OLA report and the Senate DFL Educator Licensing Governance Proposal, I think we will solve these problems. We will not be here a year from now talking about the Board of Teaching will not do this or will do that, and I just don't think that you're going to see that. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And again, there will be another opportunity perhaps too.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Associations. And in a minute, I think it's really important to keep in mind for BOSA, we like having BOSA separate. It's a peer-based board. It has managed relationships in the four licenses that it supervises very effectively since its creation. The profession, the four licensure areas actually asked the legislature for the creation of BOSA 15 years ago, many, many years ago, and I know some of you know this, but we were under the jurisdiction of the State Board of Education. And when that was dissolved, responsibility for administrative licenses actually went to the department. And the profession itself, all four of them, the community ed directors, special ed directors, superintendents, and principals, were not pleased with that. It was a different kind of relationship. And so this peer board was created. It is the little engine that could. I mean, they move along with limited resources. They manage excellent relationships with the universities for the preparation programs. So we are strong advocates that BOSA retain the identity that it has in that and in the models that you've discussed here this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlund, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. You know, we testified at the last working group about concerns to merge the two boards together, and our concerns remain. In regards to the other proposals, we just saw those this morning. We need to review those, and was happy to provide feedback at another time. But as Mr. Aronson and Senator Claussen and Representative Uru so aptly testified, we don't believe that change needs to be made. The Board of School Administrators is working very well in all of the different functions, whether it's granting of licenses or working with the higher ed institutions or disciplinary issues. And, you know, really, I might add too, I think the Board of School Administrators is getting rolled into this issue when there's lots of other concerns, as Mr. Barnhill raised, that really need to be addressed in regards to, you know, the statute versus rule and things like that. So at this point, we have concerns about merging the board, and we are happy to continue talking with you.
Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jim Grabowska. I am a member of the Board of Teaching. I am a licensable as a teacher. I have taught middle school and high school in the state of Minnesota. I am involved in teacher prep programs. I'm also on a school board, so I'm entirely involved in the educational process. I have three observations that I would like to make. The first one, and Jim previously called this out, but I want to keep it in front of the board. One of the recommendations of the OLA is that there was an admonition not to continue trying to legislate a solution. And so I would ask that the board continue to discuss in your discussions with the different possibilities, not to double down on what has failed. The second piece is I'm actually quite surprised by some of the suggestions here that would remove local control. Local control seems to me to be a hallmark that has been embraced in the state of Minnesota, and several of these proposals would remove that. We haven't seen a demonstrated, there are assertions that there needs to be oversight, that there needs to be communication. Nevertheless, as a member of the board, nobody's called me, and I see very few people come to our meetings, and I'm not sure that people are reading the minutes that we provide. There are all kinds of avenues for continued communication that don't require legislation. The third one, and I recognize the politicization, boy, that's a difficult word for me to say, as a potential issue. But let me tell you that with regard to my appointment, and I am a current gubernatorial appointee, so I was appointed by Governor Dayton. Nevertheless, my candidacy was vetted by my school board before I came aboard. My candidacy was also evaluated by MSBA before I was put forward to the governor. And my candidacy was also vetted in front of the legislature. So in terms of politics, we shouldn't lay this simply at the feet of the governor because there are a number of steps that already exist. And I think that in some of the discussions that are taking place here, that independence, as Representative Yaruso already called out, begs the question at what expense? At exclusion. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Crest.
Mr. Chair, members, Cindy Crest with MACD. In this hearing this morning, for the first time, I feel like I don't have to tell you what MACD is. There have been enough references to it that I think I can use the acronym. I have four very brief points that I'd like to make. First is that we continue to
Ms. support... Ms. Crisp, perhaps for the tape, though.
Oh, Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. First is that we support the OLA recommendations regarding consolidating everything under a single entity, and that being the Board of Teaching. I have a lot of confidence in OLA recommendations because, unlike virtually all of us in this room, they didn't play any role in making the decisions that have gotten to this point. So I see them as having a particularly removed and objective perspective. Secondly, even though this does not directly affect our members, we believe it's absolutely essential that a majority of the members of the board be teachers. That's consistent with other professions. When I was a teacher myself, I know that we were very interested as professionals in holding ourselves accountable. So we believe that that is very important. Third, obviously, we'd hope to continue to have at least one voice on the board. Currently, we have one higher ed member specified on the Board of Teaching. Having that one person there does not mean that we have any control over the final decisions, but it does ensure that we have a voice at the table as decisions are made. And finally, this is really just kind of a reminder. A couple of comments have been made today about the fact that when candidates from other states come in and they need to determine what deficiencies there are, that they're referred to higher ed to determine how to fill those. And just a reminder that as long as we have a standards-based system, there is no single state entity that can tell people specifically what they need. in order to meet licensure requirements. I believe there may be an element in the Senate Republican proposal that would get at that when you talk about having a much smaller number of licensure standards set at the state level. That might change that or ease that. But as long as we have a standards-based system that allows institutions to embed those standards in courses as they prefer, there's no way for one person or any one group of people at the state level to specifically tell a candidate exactly what they have to take to get licensure from an institution. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Aaron, and I'm here on behalf of Education Minnesota. If you believe that educators are professionals who can and should set the standards for their profession, then you will support an independent standards board. We support consolidating the two boards because we think in these decisions about licensure and standards, it's important to bring administrators and teachers together in the conversation. If you support eliminating the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators or substantially reducing their autonomy, as some of these proposals do, you're telling educators, the majority of whom are highly educated women, that they somehow do not deserve to have the same role in their profession that other individuals in any other profession in this state have. If you're pushing to move licensing under MDE, even though you've already heard representatives from the department testify that they support moving those functions to the Board of Teaching, you're devaluing the work and knowledge and practical insights of teachers who are in the classroom every day. A board that governs a profession must be led by individuals currently working in that profession. There's no reason to make an exception for teachers, and by doing so, whether intentional or not, you send a message to the public and to our teachers that they're not capable of governing themselves. We've heard a lot about the teacher shortage, and licensure is often used as a reason why we have this shortage. But in the OLA report, we saw that there are 140,000 teaching licenses in this state, and there are only 58,000 licensed teachers working in classrooms. If we want to talk about the reason for the shortage, it's the morale issue. It's people not trusting teachers, wanting to diminish their voice. That's what we hear from our members. And some of these proposals, whether intentional or not, are limiting the voice of educators in their profession. So we would just hope, as you consider everything, that you would follow the recommendations of the OLA report, follow what you've heard from the people who work in these two agencies, and maintain an independent standards board for educators. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Joshua Crossan. I'm with MNCAN, which is an education advocacy nonprofit. While having the opportunity, I would just like to throw out our support for the Republican House proposal. The Republican House proposal has a clear line of accountability where we see that the others really fail in that. It also includes community inclusion. Yes, teachers' voices are important, higher ed voices are important, but so are the voices of the community. When we're really talking about those who are working within the system, 97% of our teachers are white. Which voices, which faces are we not seeing at the table? And also, the House proposal also includes a clear and defined roles for the Board of Teaching and for the Department of Education. Something to also consider is we've heard a lot about how the legislation or the legislature is not doing its job or its role on dictating or determining what we should be considering in licensure. The Board of Teaching was required 2 years ago to write rules by January 1st, 2016. That was 9 months ago, and we still haven't seen rules or regulations drawn or written. There's nothing more clear than the current law that stands. The Board of Teaching has also just last month was found in contempt for failure to implement recently passed laws. So I'm confused as to why we're considering consolidating licensure into an agency that has continuously failed to implement licensure law. So with that, again, we'd like to show our support or throw our support behind consolidating licensure rules or licensure activities under the Department of Education with clear lines of accountability. Thank you.
We'll take a few more minutes, and anyone else that would like to join us, and welcome.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Keller. I unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and Print Disabled. come to talk today at the Legislative Study Group on Education Licensure on September 29th, 2016. I'd like to address two things, if I may. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. First, the part about the governance, and then secondly, about the accessibility of your documents and the functionality, including not only at the legislature but at the Board of Teaching, and how to make this more effective and engaging for the community. First of all, as far as the governance piece, I'm unpaid lobbyist, Minnesota legislature. I bounce between the Board of Teaching, attended some of those meetings, Minnesota legislature, both the Senate and House, and obviously at the Minnesota Department of Education and their data requests in some of their meetings. It's because we don't have a Board of Education, so it's kind of helped to me understand the functionalities. It's complex and time-consuming. And I don't know if you ever considered the Board of Education, but that's what we got in Minnesota, unfortunately, right now. So sometimes it's hard to put a handle on this governance piece, and I can respectfully understand that. One of the documents recently that I got, a secure document from Ms. Erin Dome at the Board of Teaching regarding the twice exceptional, currently a jargon or lingo word in Minnesota statute. I believe those specific individuals, twice exceptional, are likely those, since it doesn't have a definition, those are kids that have a gift and been labeled with a disability. However, they're variable learners. I think there's a lot of potential teachers out there in this tier system that could be experts in specific areas to address those specific, unique, variable abilities of those students. Perhaps once the legislature consider putting domains into the statute, Minnesota Statute 120B15 has four types of underrepresented high potential gifted students. The only one that is not in there that's defined is the twice exceptional. There's the war on poverty, which is the economically disadvantaged of 1965. There's the English language learners, Title III, now Title I in education, and then the minority, which is the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And our goal is to provide a level playing field for these types of variable potential high types of learners, and that when we look at the spectrum in education, in the classroom, in the colleges, in K-12, throughout, that these individuals are integrated in a way that they can be fully employed and independent and provide those services for those individual learners. My suggestion regarding the governance piece is, first of all, it has to do with part two, making these documents fully accessible. I reported to the Minnesota legislature in the House that the OLA final report was not fully accessible for the public. They said specifically orally that they work with me, but you will find in a data request I will provide in the future, they have never worked with me in writing or oral, frankly. So it's an important piece that we make those documents fully accessible for the public to be engaged with those. And last, regarding your own documents, the one called the Senate DFL Proposal Tiered Licensure Framework, that document is not fully accessible, I believe. And last but least, Ms. Erickson's document doesn't say in the header anywhere that's a House proposal. That would be helpful for the public to know, the one that's called Agency Licensure and Professional Educational Boards. Just so the public know that we have these multiple documents online. And I know it's the Legislative Coordinating Committee to make sure that these documents are fully accessible, but they have not lived up to the spirit of ADA, AA, or frankly, Minnesota Statute 16E03, which makes sure that such technology is accessible and functional for the two types of people found in the Higher Education Opportunity Act.
Okay, Mr. Heller.
Of 2008, blindness and print disability. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. And I appreciate a written response back regarding this. Otherwise, I'd rather not go to the Office of Human Rights regarding AAA. So thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Okay, members, we're going to go next to the tiered licensure proposals, and same fashion, we need to adjourn by noon, if not a few minutes prior. So we'll go in the same order, and Representative Erickson, if you had a couple of preliminary remarks, or we could go right to Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Chair Wigger, we'll go directly to nonpartisan staff, Tim Strom.
Mr. Chair, again, members.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, thank you. The document from the House says draft-tiered licensor structure on the top of the portrait laid-out page. Mr. Chair, members, what the House proposal in front of you recommends is a tiered licensure system. The way this sheet is laid out is in the first column, the tier number and type of license is listed. The second column shows the duration of that particular license. The third column talks about the issue of whether that license could be renewed. And then the last column contains the details for each of those categories of licensure. The proposal for the Tier 1 licensure is the temporary licensure. This essentially would come at the request of the employing authority, be it a school, charter school, school district, would require a bachelor's degree or otherwise professional credentials and include at least one of the following, and there's a list there of about eight things that at least one of those would need to be met in order for the individual to qualify for the new temporary license. Again, it would have a duration of 1 year. It would be available for renewal for three times and an option for an additional renewal. The second tier would be the initial licensure. Under the initial licensure, again, this would have a one-year term, would be renewable for 3 years. The criteria would include that the holder of or the applicant for this license would have their bachelor's degree and at least two of the following, and those include at least eight credits in the related content area related to that field of licensure, field-specific methods training, at least 2 years training experience, a passing score on all of the state-required licensure exams, and completion of a state-approved teacher preparation program. Again, two of those five conditions would need to be met in order for the individual to apply for the initial licensure. Mr. Chair, members, then the third type of license would be the Tier 3 license, the professional or standard license. This would have a 3 year duration, essentially tying in with the duration of the tenure as well. It would be renewed at an unlimited number of times. The individual holding this license would have their bachelor's degree, a passing score on all of the state required licensure requirements. And would either have to have completed a Minnesota-approved teacher preparation program or a state-approved teacher preparation program that includes field-specific student teaching of not less than 6 weeks. Finally, Mr. Chair, then, there would be the top tier, the fourth tier of licensure, which would be the full professional license. Like many of the licenses now, that would run for 5 years with renewal every 5 years for an unlimited number of times. The individual would meet all of the requirements for Tier 3, have at least one summative teacher evaluation performed, and be rated effective or higher on that summative teacher evaluation, and have at least 3 years of teaching experience. So, Mr. Chair, under this proposal, there'd be four levels of licensure, and as one moves up the tiers, would approach the license, the full professional license that's listed at the bottom of the page.
Questions, comments? Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think a question for Mr. Strom. I noticed in Tier 1 and 2, it's a bachelor's degree or professional credential. And I'm wondering if you can clarify for me, first of two interrelated questions, what is meant by professional credential? What would you qualify?
Mr. Strong. Chair, Representative Dabney, perhaps Representative Erickson or Loon would like to speak to which of those professional credentials they are envisioning in the draft would fit.
Representative Dabney, I'm going to turn to partisan researcher Jody Withers to comment on our professional credential. Mr. Withers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, when Chair Erickson and Chair Loon asked for some advice on the structure of this, the issue came up of what do you do with somebody under Tier 1, for instance, who never completed a four-year degree. They do not have a bachelor's, but they have some kind of professional certification that would have gotten them in as a community expert. And so that's where their professional certification came in. I don't have a specific example for you of what might qualify perhaps somebody in a career and technical education course as a mechanic, didn't have a four-year degree, but they are holding a recognized professional certification.
Okay. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that, Mr. Withers. And, Mr. Chair, I can direct this directly to Mr. Withers, or we can go through members your preference. But I notice on this same line, the professional credential qualifies you for a Tier 1.
Excuse me. Representative Dabney, is your mic on? The switch?
Oh. Sorry, not used to the fanciness. I do know, however, you may recall on the House floor, the Speaker has a mute button for members, and we believe used it so to cut off debate at points. So the professional credential allows for someone to be licensed to Tier 1 and Tier 2, but then drops away at Tier 3. And I'm wondering, in the scenario Mr. Withers just referenced, where you're someone teaching the career and technical field based on your professional credential as a welder, as an electrician, as a whatever it may be, why under this proposal are they not eligible for a Tier 3 license and unlimited renewals? Just looking for the rationale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I think Chairs Erickson and Loon would be open to adding a professional credential to Tier 3 if that is your suggestion. I think the idea initially was you have some schools employing community experts who are providing valuable services to the community but aren't necessarily seeking to become a 20-year professional teacher. And so I think at some point, you either are going to be a community expert providing a valuable teaching option such as a career technical educator, or you actually want to become a fully licensed professional educator. At some point, we figure a bachelor's degree would factor in. But if you're suggesting adding professional credential to Tier 3, I'm sure they would be open to that, but I'll let them speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Withers.
Senator Dahl, or excuse me, Representative Urusso, followed by Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the question of the professional credential, I realize this is not the final version of this, but I think that some sort of qualification of that as to relevance would be good, that it needs to be a relevant professional credential, not a random professional credential. In the Tier 1, this person is required to have one of the things on the following list. And because it's only one, I find a couple of the things that are included in the list to be weak, very weak. For example, the completion of the human relations coursework is required for licensure now. It's in all of our requirements. But that one thing, I don't think, would really satisfy how well prepared somebody is to go into a classroom. Similarly, the at least 8 credits in related content area is pretty weak. That's 2 courses. So if you want to be in it, if someone were coming in to teach English, they could have had their freshman comp and one college English course. Coming in to teach math, that wouldn't have gotten you past trig, depending on where you started out. Coming in to teach chemistry, you wouldn't have had any physical chemistry or organic chemistry whatsoever. So in terms of field-specific content, I don't think that 8 credits really And it just says related content area, actually. So I think that's too weak, particularly when we're looking at the possibility of, you know, professional credential, which is pretty broad. If we're only going to require one thing, we better make sure all those things on that list are really relevant and satisfy, you know, they provide a, frankly, high enough bar. When we get down to requiring two of them, then it's a bit better. I still quibble with the merely 8 credits. I don't think that gets you very far within a field. Again, it's only 2 courses, and that includes, you know, whatever the introductory thing is. So I'd like to see us tighten those up. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, followed by Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on the Tier 3 license, professional or standard. And I believe our student teaching requirements currently are 12 weeks, so I feel that the 6 weeks is kind of watering down what we feel is important in terms of the best experience that a potential teacher could have in getting ready for the classroom.
Sir Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the Tier 1 license, if you had a scenario where, and this does frequently happen, where you don't have a full-time position in one area, and so you're trying to fill a 0.4 position, a 0.6 position. Let's say you had a 0.4 elementary teacher position that you could fill, and then because it states there at least 2 years of teaching experience, and you have that, you could assign that teacher to teach high school chemistry. No, it's pretty far-fetched, but I'm saying that I think there's a problem here that we have really pretty loosely defined that. And then the other thing is that you can renew this for 3 years without any additional requirements whatsoever. And I think generally when you're renewing some of these one-year licenses, there has to be a demonstration that the person is registered or pursuing a teacher license, is taking coursework toward a license. So I think it certainly solves teacher shortage problems, but I'm not sure it puts a licensed certified teacher potentially in the classroom. I think it opens up for some abuses in some areas, or at least in really questioning the qualifications of that teacher in the classroom. So I think we need to take a better look at that. And I think that's something in not only this requirement, but I think in the Senate requirement as well, the DFL, similar kind of things. So I think we need to take a look at putting some more restrictions in that area.
Further questions? Representative Loon.
Comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just think... I'm hearing the concerns or observations raised by Senator Dahl and Senator Claussen and others. I guess, you know, those list of bullets under the requirements does pretty closely mirror what the OLA was suggesting for a Tier 1. So just so people, just reminding you kind of where some of that came back from. And I think also keeping in mind... And I know, you know, the senator is a former school administrator. This also places a degree of faith in school administrators and school boards in that, who are, the boards certainly are elected by their local community to make some thoughtful, rational decisions on who they're putting in the classrooms before their students. So it's trying to somehow sort of walk that line of recognizing that some school districts may be in a very difficult position to find people to provide instruction to students, sometimes in very areas where it's hard to find someone, career and technical and others, and also having some flexibility in recognizing some of those circumstances. So, but a good discussion, and I think one we'll want to continue.
Thank you. We'll go next to Senator Pratt, if you'd like to comment on the proposal that you put together on tiered licensure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Which I'm trying to find.
It's the one with the black bar on the top.
And I think you'll find a lot of similarity between our proposal, the House proposal, as well as with the legislative auditor's report. We start off with Tier 1 community expert, a one-year license. We took a little bit different approach in that we believe that, as Senator or Representative Loon said, sorry for the demotion, Representative, we trust local school boards and administrators to put the right teachers in the classroom, and we view these as more of the part-time specialty hard-to-fill positions. We had a lot of discussion in the Senate about career and technical educators. Senator Dames has been a strong advocate on the shortage of ag educators, that we believe that this will help with that. That someone have at least a bachelor's degree with 8 credits in the content area, professional certification or 5 years experience in the content area, completion of at least a first year of the teacher prep program, and teaching in the field where there is no license. I think it's interesting to know, one of the comments I want to make is that this is not a tenure eligible, and when I say tenure, I also mean to include continuing contract rights. I believe that every school district would like to have a fully licensed teacher in these roles, but we know that today that's not the case. We have a number of shortage areas where these community experts would be able to step in and fill that. And again, particularly as we see it in ag education, in career technical, recently I've heard about shortages in foreign language, where we may be able to have some people with strong bilingual skills come in and step in. The second would be the probationary. We could play around with the term, but that was at least the term that stuck in our mind. Would be the initial 3-year license could be renewed once, where the community expert is not pursuing to become a professional teacher. This is someone who does intend to become a professional teacher. It's for those candidates that recently graduate from a teacher prep program or are in process of completing their teacher prep program. The idea is that someone in this licensure would transition to a standard license. That's the path. Then we have the standard license, 5 years, unlimited renewal. It's your normal teaching license that allows for grade level restrictions or content restrictions, special ed endorsements, any other designation. This license would have tenure and continuing, would be tenure and continuing contract right eligible. The master teacher, again, would be a 5-year license. They would meet all the criteria for a standard license. They would be rated effective or the equivalent or higher on the teacher evaluation. And rather than just talking about a master teacher being someone who's put in time, having this person be able to counsel, mentor, be a participant in the evaluation program. So we're really recognizing the growth and the expertise in that profession, that they truly are a master. If that teacher fails to keep an effective or higher rating, then they certainly would be eligible to be downgraded to a standard license. And so I think it puts some sort of real prestige around the concept of being a master teacher. And finally, a little outside the box and admittedly outside of the legislative auditor's report would be the lifetime retired teacher's license. Someone who has at least 10 years of teaching in the state of Minnesota, was in good standing at the time that they retired. Someone who could step in and, again, take some of these part-time roles in a content area. Someone who could step in and perform a long-term substitute role without going through a lot of hoops and a lot of bureaucracy. We have some fabulous retired educators out there, and some of them still would like, they want to stay retired, but they still have a passion to be in the classroom and a passion to be educating students. And you've heard me talk about my mother on many occasions, and she was one of them, that for many years after her retirement, she stayed engaged. She didn't enter this profession for the money, obviously. She entered it because she was passionate about what she did, and this allowed her an outlet to feed that passion. And I think it's an untapped resource we have in the state that we need to keep available.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've spent both in the House and the Senate a lot of time talking about the HLC certification issues, and I'd like to see in Senator Pratt's recommendation, the master teacher, in the House recommendation, there's the level 4, level 5. I think we should add something that if a teacher in Minnesota has the HLC certification to teach the college in the schools or for college credit, we should recognize that and put that into any type of a proposal that we have. So we recognize that those are truly master teachers as well and have certainly gone beyond to earn that.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. I think you're touching on the spirit of what we were trying to do, and while it might not be documented, it's certainly consistent with our thinking.
Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to touch a little on the community expert portion of it. We have a major need in Minnesota for carpenters and plumbers and electricians and air conditioning folks, and the list goes on and on. And years ago, we used to offer these programs in the high schools, and then, of course, these folks would get an experience there and go on to Votech College, and we would be able to fill those fields. Today, that's not happening. So we felt this would be a good opportunity to allow some of our local school districts, if they want to have a class in carpentry or plumbing or something like that, they can bring in a community expert, somebody that's in the field and has done well and is well licensed and trained, and they could carry these classes out, give these students that experience and encourage them possibly to go into a Votech program for a future career in that area.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Further questions or comments? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dames reminded me of something that I wanted to bring out on the community expert piece. Many of us on the Higher Education and Workforce Development Committee have been out and reviewed alternative training structures. I've been out to the Carpenters Union, the iron workers, the electrical workers. They do a great job of training their people without necessarily going through the bachelor degree field, and they bring a tremendous amount of expertise. And I think when you look at this community expert, we're trying to encompass some of that non-traditional training, that expertise that might not lend itself to a full-time career, but someone who wants to give back to their community and has the skills. I think it's sometimes easy to criticize proposals, Representative Dabney, I hope soon we will see yours. We gave our proposal about 2 weeks ago to the chair, so it certainly could have been available online. I know I looked at the House proposal a couple of weeks ago. We got the Senate proposal about 16 hours before the start of this meeting. And so I hope, Representative Dabney will soon see a proposal from the House Democrat Caucus.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pratt, I came in this morning expecting that we would be working in a collaborative process, and I'm sorry to see some are choosing to overlay partisan divide over this. I certainly would think that the licensure of teachers in Minnesota shouldn't fall to being a partisan strategy to try to accomplish political, short-term political gains against the needs and interests of students and teachers in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Dabney, Representative Dabney, that's certainly not the case, but, as we heard from a number of the testifiers today, there was a lack of transparency here. We certainly took the assignment that was laid out by both chairs at the end of last meeting, work together. I don't think you'll see in our proposal anything that's strongly partisan. That's not the intent here. The intent here is to provide some ideas to reach a bipartisan agreement. And I guess I'm just feeling like the criticism, I would have liked to have seen something a little more substantial.
I appreciate that you have been here participating in these hearings, but it was probably inappropriate for me to go down that line, and I apologize, but I guess some sense of frustration as well. Necessary to address this point any further? Okay, Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Particularly with regard to the Tier 1 and the Tier 2, following on my comments and the comments of others about, you know, how we define that base level content area background. You know, there's really a couple of different issues. One is the content background and one is the teaching experience, you know, being in the classroom part. On the content part, it's rather difficult to define in, you know, an economy of, you know, few words that will apply equally well across the rather broad range of disciplines that we're talking about. And so I think it might be wise to pull back from trying to put into statute ultimately exactly what that requirement looks like from field to field. We have content area exams in many fields, but we don't have it if we're going to be doing a plumbing class or a carpentry class or something, and we don't have it for some of our computer technology things we might want to do and that sort of thing. Part of the function of whichever entity we're going to hand this off to is to help to determine the nuts and bolts of these standards. And so we might serve the whole process better if what we come to is some kind of minimum content standards as determined by the board or whoever it's going to be. Because what that looks like is going to be really, really different. And, you know, and I don't think we can put it down to credit hours, because I wouldn't be satisfied with 8, for starters, in many fields. And I don't think that that serves for the trades at all. And I think it looks different enough from field to field that we'd be just sort of beating ourselves up trying to get that into some kind of words that would satisfy everybody's concerns on that needlessly. That we'd be micromanaging something that maybe is better left to a process that involves the peers in the field more. Thank you.
Sarah Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is having to do with that community expert. I'm a little concerned about unlimited renewal of that license. And I certainly understand Senator Dame's comments about the technical career and technical education area and the difficulty of finding people. And I really like the idea that we're going to honor professional certifications and licenses in certain areas. But I think teaching as a whole, every year we're looking at people getting better. We're looking at professional improvement. We're looking at continuous improvement. And in some way, I think that has to be demonstrated at that level in order to renew that license. So I'd really appreciate a review of that so that we're having that as a primary qualification, that we have to see some continuous improvement or effort in that area.
Thank you. Senator Dames.
Just a couple more comments on the community expert part of it. You know, what we're really doing is kind of relying on our administrators and our school board to look at the quality of these people that we're bringing in. And again, we're talking here about skills and trades, and we're not talking about math and chemistry and this and that. And we did pass a bill in the Senate a couple years ago to allow for this, and I think that sunsets in 2020 to be evaluated at that time. But, you know, when we start talking about they need to have these credits, we need to do this and we need to do that, we're starting to put limitations on. And we have to recognize at some point here, we have to really recognize that we have this need and we're not addressing it. And this is an opportunity to address that need until we can come up with something that's going to be more workable. And so that's why, you know, I really feel that this is an important piece of this reform that we're looking at for the teaching requirements. I think this is a very important piece, and I think that it has a lot to offer. And we can sit and we can certainly pick it apart and we can say why it's not good or this, that. And I understand that. And that's what we're here for today, is to discuss the issues and to try to come up with the best solution. And so that's why we're putting this out. And some of us are going to probably be fairly bullish on this, because I think it's something that's really needed, because we have to figure out a way to address it. And right now, we really don't have a lot of opportunities, and this is one of the opportunities that we could use. So I think we need to allow our local school boards, administrators, to have that option. And I don't believe that our local school boards and administrators, I think they're good with local control. I don't believe they're just going to put people in these positions that aren't going to be able to handle those situations. So I'm going to give them some credit, and I'm going to assume that they can make the decisions that I think they're able to make, and I think that this could be a good piece of this, but I do certainly appreciate all the discussion on it, and hopefully we can move this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dames. And as we know, there is a CTA group now that is reviewing licensure, and we will be incorporating or working together as we eventually put our recommendations together. We'll go next to proposals for tiered licensure that I offered. And you have a four-page handout, and we'll have Mr. Arneson highlight the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and just offer the highlights and make some broad comparisons for the benefit of the committee and the audience to the proposals that were discussed previously. So the Senate, we're talking about the document titled Senate DFL Proposal on Tiered Licensure Framework, etc. The Tier 1 license in this framework would be similar to the Tier 1, the first tier licenses in each of the prior two frameworks. It would be for the duration of 1 year, renewable once, and intended to offer a pathway for community experts or emergency hires and the like. And in many ways, the minimum requirements before the issue are similar to those offered in the other frameworks. Mm-hmm. The Tier 2 license is kind of situated between the Tier 1 license and what we might think of as kind of an entry-level license, more typical for new graduates of prep programs. So the Senate DFL proposal Tier 2 license would again be for the duration of 1 year, renewable twice in this case. The applicant would have to meet the requirements of a Tier 1 license and be enrolled in some sort of Minnesota-approved preparation program. I think it's fair to say that the intent of this Tier 2 license is to offer a pathway for people who, with some experience teaching with a Tier 1 license or involved in schools in some other way, offer some interest and aptitude for becoming more fully licensed. The Tier 3 license would be the license most typically issued to new graduates of Minnesota prep programs or candidates licensed in another state but with fewer than 3 years of experience as a professionally licensed teacher. So these would be relatively new teachers. This would be for the duration of 3 years with no renewability, but with a one-year extension available. And in comparison, I think this tier in the Senate DFL proposal would be most comparable to the Senate GOP probationary license, and then to the House GOP tier. That's kind of a combination, I think, of Tier 2 or Tier 3 license. So I'm trying to establish some kind of crosswise comparability here for your benefit. And you can read the minimum requirements here in some ways very similar to other frameworks already discussed. The next tier would be the Tier 4 license. This would be for the duration of 5 years with unlimited renewability. This would be intended primarily for teachers who had previously held the Tier 3 license and who gain more experience and pass all the required exams, or for teachers who may have been already licensed in another state and have at least 3 years teaching experience in that state. The minimum requirements before the issue of Tier 4 license would include passing all the required examinations, including skills in reading, writing, and math, and content and pedagogy exams, and some kind of induction and mentorship activities contemplated in this proposal. And then finally, the Tier 5 license would be similar in spirit to the sort of master teacher license proposed in the Senate GOP framework. A candidate for this license would have to at least meet the requirements of a Tier 4 license and obtain additional credentials, including national board certification or some sort of board-approved teacher leader certification. And this would be intended for teachers who gain more experience and desire more expanded scope of responsibility in their school. And finally, the Senate DFL proposal acknowledges that there might be special circumstances, including but not limited to substitute licenses, but doesn't offer any specific recommendation as to how those licenses would be awarded.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arneson. Could you explain where alternative teacher prep programs might fit into this? Is it included in Minnesota Approved or otherwise? Because we have Teach for America, we have a hybrid in some colleges. So where would that fall? Or if they are trained out of state in a Teach for America program, for example?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, my inclination is that where you read Minnesota Approved Teacher Prep Program, that is intended broadly, meaning any pathway already established or approved by rule or law that you know, as a sort of end point, leads toward licensure. But I would welcome the Senate Chair's clarification on his intent there.
No, that's correct, Mr. Arneson. Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions, and either Mr. Arneson, whoever wants to take these. So on the Tier 1 license, and then we had some discussion on the previous proposals about professional certification status, but I don't see that as an option. Would that be the intent, or is it the intent as it appears just on the paper, what you would have to have a bachelor's degree for a Tier 1 license?
Representative Loon, having a bachelor's degree.
A bachelor's degree?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there would be no provision for a community expert or someone else unless they had a full bachelor's degree.
Correct.
Thank you. Under the Tier 4 license category, participate in teacher cohort. I'm not familiar with that. Could you explain what teacher cohort is?
Mr. Arneson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, my understanding is that this framework contemplates that that as part of the qualification for a Tier 4 license, that a Tier 3 license holder would be required by rule or statute, sort of within the context of a revamped licensure framework, to participate in some sort of new teacher induction or mentorship or cohort activities intended to increase their skills, increase the likelihood that they would be retained beyond the first few years of their teaching experience. But again, I would welcome clarification from the chair.
That's as good as I could do. Senator Claussen. Yeah, thank you. Just to pick up on that, it could be, you know, just because you supervise a student teacher, does that qualify? If you're in a professional learning community, does that qualify? I think that needs more definition, of course. At one time in the state of Minnesota, you could get a license. If you were a licensed teacher and you were looking to get licensed in another field, you would take a praxis exam. There we go. And I know that Pearson has now come out with their national evaluation series, a number of these exams. I'm just wondering if that is still an option somewhere in the tiered program. And then at that top tier, I think I'd like to see something evidence of professional leadership, like a department chair position. A person has demonstrated leadership for that that top tier. And also, I've given the example before about a teacher that is qualified to teach HLC concurrent enrollment courses, you know, adding that to in that area as well. But the praxis issue is maybe something to we need to continue some discussion on and see if that indeed fits in a new tiered system.
Yes, thanks for the comments. It's a, like all these, it's a work in progress. I believe Representative Dabney, then Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a question on at least the Tier 4. I appreciate Senator Claussen's questions about, I believe it was, the teacher cohort and what that meant, but the line below that, the initial personal growth plan, my question there is, would that be submitted to the state licensing entity, or is that something that's kept local? For instance, currently, as I recall, to be licensed, you have to, or to be relicensed, you have to submit a reflective essay. But I believe that is held at the local level and not passed along to the state. And I guess I'm raising some questions about data privacy, as well as volume of paperwork that anybody would at the state would need to look through. So, thank you.
I'll look further into that. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to point out a couple of my concerns in this proposal, going back to community experts. According to this, the community expert would have to have a bachelor's degree, which I think is a bit problematic in some of these areas. If you have somebody that's in the construction trade, I don't know if they necessarily need a bachelor's degree to teach good construction. We get into the renewability. It's once for two total years. So if we have somebody that's a contractor, an excellent construction tradesperson, he's coming in and he's teaching one class in wintertime in a public school, he's going to be able to do that 2 years, and then that school is going to be out trying to find another person to do that. I'm not sure why we put these roadblocks up. I'm not sure why we're doing that, and that is a concern of mine.
It's noted, and it's a work in progress. Followed by Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question just occurred to me, and maybe we do have a common understanding or working definition of teaching experience. But you know, it's kind of throughout many of these proposals. And as I was looking at the Tier 2 licensure and the reference to grow your own, just wondering, would teaching experience apply to, is that only if you're teacher of record or if you're a paraprofessional in a school and participating in a grow your own and pursuing getting your full teacher preparation to become a fully licensed teacher? Does that paraprofessional experience count as teaching, or do we have a definition of that?
Representative Loon, we do need a clearer definition.
Thank you.
Representative Yaruso, and followed by Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the Tier 4 license. And I have a little bit of a problem with the fourth bullet point, passing score on content and pedagogy exams from any state. This would set up the possibility of, say that there was a particular exam that was being used both by the state of Minnesota and by some other state, a national test, and the other state had a lower standard for those exams and you passed in that state, that would now count for Minnesota. So that's an extreme example of the issue with it. I recognize, you know, the attempt to not make people jump through multiple hoops, but I think if we're going to have this particular hoop that people need to pass our standards for the exams that we've chosen, we might as well have the hoop. Now, if they happen to have taken that test previously and gotten the right score, that's okay. Or if somebody's going to go to the effort of setting up equivalencies between them, which takes extra work, means extra money and extra time, fine. But I really am not very comfortable with deciding that another state gets to set that passing score. It's a little bit different than someone coming in with the license that has the experience and so on. Thank you.
Point noted, it might be cumbersome to determine that equivalency, but I understand. Representative Erickson, on that point.
Thank you, Chair Uyghur. And Representative Urusso, I think if we set a cut score of expectation for those coming from other states, you know, we could set that aside, and that could probably qualify and take care of your concern. I think that could work. Thank you.
Did anyone else have a question or a comment before we open it up for some reaction from the audience? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Uyghur. I just had a question in Tier 4. I agree with Representative Dabney on the data privacy of a personal growth plan, but I wonder, did you consider at any time the value in a summative teacher evaluation like we did in our submission?
Representative Erickson, yes, and it would be very helpful. Thank you, members, and I'm going to ask, as we did on governance, if anyone would like to give a minute or so with some feedback, and then Representative Erickson and I will comment on next steps. Okay.
Thank you. Jim Barnhill with the Board of Teaching. I want to go back to some things I said earlier. When I got involved in this, the question was, is this a political endeavor that we're involved in? And the answer was no. So then I said to myself, well, okay, so these are common sense issues, right, with all the work that we're doing here. And then over the 3 years, I've realized it's not common sense. I can even right here today, we're all struggling with, well, what about this? What's the definition of a teacher? What about bachelor's degree? It's not common sense. So what I'm led to believe is that to work these things out requires a high level of expertise of people who are dedicated to thinking through these issues. Board staff have put hundreds of hours of time into thinking through the tiered licensure structure that we provided to you and through a draft. Our board has looked at this. We've asked all the same kinds of questions that you are asking. The question is, do you put these things, some sort of tiered licensure structure, into statute, or do you allow this process to go through rulemaking? We believe that we can go through the rulemaking process. We believe that we can come up with a very high-quality tiered licensure program or structure that does solve the problems that Senator Doms is referring to. That's correct. For example, in the community experts, we believe that we have our proposal actually solves that problem. The question is it a partisan issue? And it's not. It's a democratic issue. It goes back to, I've realized through this Board of Teaching experience of mine that democracy is extraordinarily slow. But at the same time, we're right on the verge of solving the problem. If we go through the rulemaking process, it's not partisan. It's stakeholders from all over the place giving democratic input into what this structure should look like. That's not partisan. That's people from all across the community having input into the process. Finally, it goes before a judge who actually says and looks back, was this process fair? Did we make good, did you all make good, high-quality decisions with stakeholder input? And we believe the answer will be yes. Only at that point does it come back to the Board of Teaching. So we actually think that we can have a high-quality product in place, or I don't want to refer to it as a product, but a high-quality structure in place for tiered licensure before your session in March or May or whenever it's over. We think that we will have a final product done by that time before you could even have a chance to legislate it. We just need you to empower us to do so. Of course, the problem is that we can't continue through rulemaking if we don't know what you're going to do. It's a chicken and the egg kind of a situation. If we know that we have been empowered by you to do this, we could have all of these things in place and moving forward. So I would ask the final question is, what faults do you actually find in the model that we have proposed? I would ask you that question to think through. What faults do you actually see in our model that solves the community expert issue, the recurring year after year of community expert issue, but at the same time recognizes that carpenter or that plumber, and instead of that person having to come back for repeated permission, gives that person a special certificate? So I just would like to ask you that question. I appreciate all of the hard work that you're thinking through. I just want you to recognize that we've put hundreds of hours ourselves into these exact same questions and have a democratic process in place to get that stakeholder input that is different from a two-minute testimonial when you go into session. That's just not the same kind of stakeholder input than it is through the rulemaking process. So I would respectfully ask you to consider giving us or continuing on with the rulemaking authority that we have and to put this into place in that way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Weger, members, my name is Troy Helgen. I'm the Career and Technical Education Coordinator at Lakes Country Service Cooperative, where I work with 26 school districts on CTE. I'm also the current co-chair of the CTE Legislative Task Force. Just two quick things, just for considerations. Number one, please be cognizant of the vast differences between, and I think we've already kind of alluded to this, there's significant differences between CTE licensure and methods for CTE licensure as there are with regular teacher's licensure. So please just be cognizant of that. On this, and having a one-size-fits-all approach might not be the most effective way of moving forward. And additionally, please consider CTE licensure. I think sometimes we, through conversation, it becomes a thought that CTE licensure is of a lesser licensure, particularly when we use those community expert words. It has sometimes an implication of something lesser than a what considered a full teacher licensure. So let's just please be very cognizant of that. And the second thing is just a general comment, but please make sure that we're being consider the work of the CTE Legislative Task Force as well as we both move forward. I really think that the two groups moving in tandem towards the positive changes is really could be very impactful. And two co-chairs will be receiving the invitation from both co-chair Steve Jones and I to invite either co-chairs or whomever you designate to come and attend our next meeting. So I just appreciate this the opportunity and certainly welcome any further conversation.
Thank you, and we agree.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I just want to start by saying thank you for all three proposals. They're a vast improvement on where we currently are, and they are consistent with the OLA's recommendations in the sense that they create an understandable and consistent system that has a progression of expectations as you move along the career spectrum. So thank you for that. Just three quick recommendations as you look at moving from here. One, we would echo a number of the concerns about whether it's Tier 1 and 2 or the community expert about allowing for some expertise that doesn't require a bachelor's degree. There are a lot of examples that have already been discussed, as well as some in the earlier conversation where you're trying to find a .2 person that's, you know, in a very specialized area. And there's a lot of expertise that doesn't require a bachelor's degree. The second advice is just to, as you go forward, make sure that there's consensus on what it is you're requiring and that there's statewide access to that. And a couple of, one example was the cohort, the teacher cohort requirement or model. The other is also requirements to participate in a district mentorship program. Again, those are good, but do we have them everywhere and are they equally accessible? And then the last recommendation is try to connect, at least when you get to Tier 5 or the master teacher level, some connection to the statewide teacher evaluation system. You know, someone that's been rated highly effective or however districts choose to define that level. Or at least like some of Senator Claussen's recommendations about a department lead or perhaps flexibility. They've been identified as the district's teacher of the year. You know, that might be something to include as a master teacher criteria. But try to blend in a little bit of the evaluation and local recognition process as well. But thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen, I'm the third Jim. I guess that's one of the prerequisites today for addressing this body. I have three observations that I would like to make. First of all, with regard to bipartisanship, I was glad that it was put on the table because I think it is one of the elephants in the room. And when I was confirmed last year, Senator Pratt told me that there was bipartisan interest in resolving this issue. And so I certainly hope that that is the case, because if that does not happen, then the only thing that we've done is continue this problem and kick the can down the road. The second thing that I would like to say is that preparation matters. So be careful of the loopholes that you create. I would pull out, for example, in one of the samples that we've been handed, that a school attests to an emergency need. There is, and that is the one of the following areas that a school could ask for. There is nothing in that exception that guarantees any kind of quality in front of a classroom. With regard to 8 credits, I teach Spanish. 8 credits of Spanish, and we don't have to talk about credits, we can talk about hours. 8 credits of Spanish, and the amount of time that you spend in that language, according to national norms of proficiency in a language, means that you're at the novice level. The novice level means you can't even communicate at a sentence level. Not even at a sentence level. So please, in terms of putting quality people in front, do not, for lack of a better term, dumb down the standards so that anybody can get in the classroom. I did want to address Senator Dame's observations very quickly. One of the things that you would find if you sat through a Board of Teaching meeting is the number of exceptions that we're asked to rule on. And I think to date, probably within the next 2 weeks, I can guarantee it, we will have gone through over 1,000, over 1,000. Now, I can tell you that the vast majority, to the tune of better than 99%, perhaps 99.9%, are not the trades. The people that are asking for exceptions are in the areas of special ed, are in the area of elementary ed. So please, when you take into consideration the development of a tiered model, that you don't create an opportunity for our most vulnerable students to have people who are totally incompetent to stand before them. Professional development, because professional development and came out, I'm a huge proponent of professional development, by the way, and it is continuous, and this is something that I would like to see personally, and I think the Board of Teaching would like to see throughout the process. That frequently when we get applications for exceptions, it is that nobody, they do not have an investment in education, except that this perhaps is an opportunity that they want to accept. And they're asked to check that off on their document. And they say, no, I'm not pursuing licensure. I'm not pursuing anything to continue to develop. I'm good enough as I am. And we don't believe that professional development is static. So, for example, when you talk about in one of the previous discussions about a retired teacher, my one concern with retired teachers, and I respect them, both of my parents were exceptional teachers, is that they can stay current in the profession. that teaching doesn't stop and that engaging students doesn't stop. It's a continuous process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I just want to, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to weigh in on these proposals and thank both the chairs for submitting proposals and the minority party in the Senate for submitting a proposal as well. Each brings real strengths to the new system that we are developing. And so I would like to just make my comments today about a couple of things. Ever since the issue of teacher licensure has been bubbling up since I have been in my position, we have continued to tell the Board of Teaching one thing. Whatever the system is, please simplify it and streamline it enough that is so that a school board member can speak to a potential teacher candidate in their community and guide them very clearly along the pathway to licensure, and that it is realistic for them, and that they it reduces barriers. But then, on the other hand, I want to just bring forth a couple of comments from another lens. Grace Kelleher and myself have just traveled the state speaking to school board members and superintendents, and the teacher shortage issue is so alive and well, and so we have to admit that the current structure that we have has played some role in the teacher shortage issue that we have right now when you hear the stories across the state. So what we want you to do is make sure that whatever solution that you come up with does eliminate some barriers so that more people will be open to going through pathways to become a teacher. And that leads me to another comment that I did not bring up in the governance discussion, but I would like to bring it up now, and that is that the number of teachers on the board, I don't want to discuss that, but I think that it is the makeup of those teachers. I think that we should have teachers that represent shortage areas so that they would bring a different teacher voice to that, to whichever board you choose to approve. And we should have people on that board that represent who have firsthand experience of trying to get agriculture educators into our classroom, special ed teachers into our classrooms. I just think that they will bring a unique perspective and might really contribute to the problem solving that we've seen in the past. And then I also want to speak to one of the proposals of not requiring constant application each year when they know that there is a good person in the classroom and it is just a temporary type situation. School board members and superintendents talked so much about they are just becoming good at writing these applications and missing deadlines and it is cumbersome for them. And then we also, in closing, I would just like to thank you for those people who included in their proposal the reference to the statewide teacher evaluation system. I think that performance in the classroom is valuable, and I think that that is one way that we should be using what we already have in existence to strengthen whatever process we adopt. So with that, I will conclude my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just want to start. I'm David Aaron. I'm speaking on behalf of Education Minnesota. And I just want to start by thanking everyone, the staff and the members for their hard work on this. Our system is complex. It's cumbersome. It's confusing. And translating all that statutory and rule language into a clear grid like this, as the OLA has also done, I think is a huge benefit to our members and to our candidates and people out in the community who are considering being teachers, knowing what do I have to do in order to get this type of license and what do I have to do to get to the next license. So whatever, if this takes the form of legislation or rulemaking, I just hope that would be clear, to have a Tier 1 license, you need this. And that doesn't exist in our current statute. So I'm hopeful that that will happen, especially at the community expert level. I've been at the Board of Teaching meetings where they consider these requests. And the statute right now requires the board to consider a number of factors for community experts. But it's so unclear about, you know, when they should deny or grant these requests. So if we can have clear guidelines about what you need, what are the minimum requirements to be a community expert, we do think a bachelor's degree makes sense, but you know, that is something for further discussion. We are concerned about proposals that reference tenure in the licensure process. You know, tenure is a separate issue from a person's license. People need a license in order to be considered a teacher who's eligible for tenure, but that is a separate process, and we don't think that that should be part of this discussion. That wasn't the charge of the OLA or this study group. We do like, in the Senate DFL proposal, the Tier 2 license. I think that that's a slight change from other proposals that we've seen. There is questions about, you know, paras who are in grow-your-own programs or out-of-state teachers. I think the Tier 2 license addresses that in the Senate DFL proposal. It allows those people to be in the classroom, to work as a teacher of record, but also requires them to do some things in order to get a standard license. So it's inclusive, it addresses the needs of our schools, but it also recognizes that in the end, people need to make progress, and all teachers do need to eventually meet the same requirements. The final comment I'll make is about the Tier 5 license in the Senate DFL proposal. We think that that's good. We were interested in the two different paths, the master teacher and the teacher leader. We think that those are different skills and they should be recognized separately. I do like Senator Claussen's idea of one of the ways of, you know, with kind of multiple ways of getting that credential, and one of them being evidence of teacher leadership as a department chair. You know, our teachers do a lot of that work for little pay, additional pay, if any, and there should be a way of recognizing that for those folks. We think, though, in other proposals we've seen, there was a minimum number of years that you needed to get that Tier 5 license. I don't see that in this proposal. I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, but we think, you know, we saw a requirement of 8 years of teaching, and we think that that's appealing, or some clear minimum number of years before you can be considered a master teacher. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Daniel Smith, and I'll introduce myself, I guess, as a passionate retired educator. Having spent most of my education career and career in technical education, both in the classroom and at the school district and regional administrative levels, and most recently retired some years ago from the Minnesota Department of Education, where I led the Career and Technical Education Division. I'm very pleased that the legislature established this group to look at educator licensure, and also established the Minnesota Department of or directed the Minnesota Department of Education to convene the Career and Technical Educator Licensing Advisory Task Force. I hope that the two groups will come forward with recommendations to help alleviate the teacher shortage problems in Minnesota. As work progresses, however, and given the working timelines that the groups have established, I'm concerned that the recommendations between the two groups will conflict. I'm especially concerned that the Legislative Study Group on Educator Licensure, this group, seems to be moving forward towards endorsement of a tiered system of awarding teaching licenses, and will continue to perpetuate requirements that have not served the career and technical education community well since licensure for CTE programs was transferred to the Board of Teaching in 1998. Minnesota has long recognized the special preparation that makes for quality teaching and career and technical education, and delineated those special attributes in Minnesota Rules 8710-8000, Core Skills for Teachers of Career and Technical Education. Those special attributes support a strong connection to the business community for which career and technical education students are prepared. By recognizing the roles of advisory committees, tool and equipment usage, career development, and special learning environments, The Minnesota State Colleges and Universities recognize the importance of these business and industry connections by requiring teachers in career and technical education programs to have recent relevant work experience in the field of study. I ask that, at a minimum, teacher preparation programs for career and technical education teachers at the secondary level recognize ways that content skills can be learned through work experience or through means other than collegiate experience. A tiered system of teacher licensure must include alternative means to acquire content knowledge. I'm sure that the professional organizations in career and technical education, that's the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Educators and the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators, would both happily continue to work with this group and others to perpetuate a good system of educator licensure in Minnesota. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Member Cindy Chris with the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. Since our members have not had a chance to review these specific proposals, I'm going to just make some very general comments based on discussions we've had. First of all, I say, you know, we had some concerns with some elements of OLA's proof of concept tier licensure structure that they put forward. And from my initial assessment, I can see elements of all three of your proposals that improve some of those specific items that were of concern to us. But mostly, I think my members would want me today just to focus on a few broad principles that we hope to see in whatever you adopt. And again, I see elements of these reflected in all three proposals. And these are the big challenges that face you. So you don't need me in a way to tell you this, but we just want to recognize them. First of all, that whatever you do, find some balance between the flexibility that we know schools need in order to be able to fully staff their classrooms without compromising the high standards, which our programs seek to meet, our schools seek to meet, and you seek to enact into statute and rule. Secondly, we really hope that whatever you adopt, each tier is clear and provides fairness and consistency, so that whether people are prepared in Minnesota or come from some other state across the country, that there is a fair and consistent way of determining their licensure. A third broad point is the importance, and again, I see this in all three proposals, of finding some way to recognize and value experience, preparation, and assessment. We know that those three things can tell us the same thing about somebody. They can tell us different things. And so we hope you think a lot, and clearly you have, about just how much can assessments actually tell us, how much can experience tell us, and how much can preparation tell us. Fourth, I just say, you know, I think we think this is a good place for the sort of trust but verify. So, you know, we hope you trust our programs, but we expect to have to verify that our candidates have met them. We want you to trust, and we want to trust administrators and schools, but we also would hope there's a way to verify that the decisions they've made warrant that trust. And then finally, an important point, and I think Jim Bartholomew stated this really well, is the value of a tiered licensure system in outlining, providing for progression into and through a profession, but also recognizing the point that's been made by Senator Doms and some of my CTE colleagues up here. I think it's actually Dames, isn't it? Is that how it's pronounced? Dames, sorry. And that is the possibility that not everyone who spends time in a classroom teaching necessarily wants to earn a full credential. So how do we recognize that and make it possible, again, however, without compromising the quality of what we expect in our schools? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Senate Study Group on Education Licensure. My name is Rick Heller, son of a carpenter, ambassador, and more. I have been in the trades for many years myself. Currently,
could you speak in the mic, Rick? We have a hard time hearing you.
Currently, the carpenters, there's a large union in the Twin City that allows individuals like myself to go back and get a bachelor's in science. And they have an agreement with Minnesota Colleges and Universities, also known as MINSCU. So I don't know, usually they they encourage that because the governors about 6 years ago and their commissioners wanted to make sure that we had common core standards. Also the nationals, which is called the National Education of Sciences, are requiring standardization, again, in the electives and the content of each course throughout the nation so individuals don't have to duplicate their classes in higher education. So as you move ahead in standards and look at community experts, as expressed by Mr. Dane, Senator Dane, I don't see that as a barrier because if the unions are encouraging its membership to get a Bachelor in Sciences, specifically perhaps for leadership, and since the governors are moving the reading level and technology and understanding of the complex texts to a higher level, I think it's a relevant piece that people got to pursue something. Even their own leaders in the nonprofits are recommending. So it's my suggestion on that. As far as the second part, I'd like to briefly talk about is about universal design principles. As I expressed before, there's two types of learners. There's the bookworms, and there's the visual and perceptual ability. Here's the trades. Here are the people that write these documents for this community or for the legislature. My suggestion, because of universal design principles, provide multiple means of representation and action expression through your documents. So here you got the words. Here you got the visuals for the public engagement. Revisers could have an alternate format on a visual level for all the public to weigh in versus just pure content. And this would also include applying not only to the Board of Teaching to make this simplified for ease and use based on how people acquire information and how they apply it. And thank you again for this opportunity to consider simplification with ease and use.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. And members, thank you for your thoughtful input. I was going to give a few remarks, but Representative Yarusso, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the one point that Mr. Heller just raised, and I'm sorry I didn't bring this up, think to bring this up before. He mentioned MinSCU and now Minnesota State. They have actually gone through this process with regard to people instructing in the trades because a number of years back, one of the reasons that the trades are advancing this bachelor's degree is because their instructors required to have bachelor's degrees, and many of the people that were instructing in the trades did not. So we might do well to have a little conversation with them about how they've managed that and, you know, any unique directions that their solutions have taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Yarusso, and thank you to each of the members for your input. I think it's been very helpful. Each of these documents is a work in progress. There's changes I am already looking at making, and based on questions, comments, feedback, and I remain optimistic that we can come together on a recommended report. We have three meetings to do that, October 25th, November 16th, and December 20th. Representative Erickson and I would appreciate, on behalf of the study group, if anyone would like to give us an email with specific recommendations and perhaps not just saying no against this, that which is fine, but this is overall what we might suggest on governance or on the tiered licensure or something directly related, that would be appreciated. And if you could do that no later than October 17th or 18th, a week before our next meeting, because then we'll review these, the proposals that we have. There are things in common in the tiered licensure that we've suggested. There are actually not as many things in common other than we're going to change things on governance, but you know, we'll get there at some point. So we invite that continued input from the audience as well as members. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Wigger, and thank you, everyone, for being here today, and thank you, colleagues and staff. You're invaluable, and we really appreciate the input that you provide. We will meet October 25 at 1 p.m. in the State Office Building, and I'm directing the House staff to be in charge of calling a meeting as soon as possible with Senate staff to discuss some of what we've heard today, or all of what we've heard today. And I would recommend that those of you in the audience who have ideas, suggestions, modifications, otherwise, to submit it as soon as possible to Senator Wigger or to me so we can pass it on to the staffs who assist us so well. Our goal, of course, before October 25th is to come to some kind of consensus on both governance and the licensing system, so that we can get input from you as we present a draft of the next step. So thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing from you as soon as possible and meeting with you in October. And we certainly would like the input, too, of the OLA as to what has transpired today in our discussion. So thank you very much, Senator Wigger.
There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.
See you guys later. Thank you.